Blog Talk Radio. Hello and welcome to Into the Darkness. Here you can richly paint in the outer limits of your voice, where dark ink becomes an odyssey of the imagination, told in crashing waves of turmoil as emotions are awakened and set to canvas in haunting fashion. I am Pam Ray. With me, as always, is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry, with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is our dark poetry night. If you find that this is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, if you get a chance, make sure to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
All right. What's up?
Oh, not much. Just, same old, same old. I'm trying to think in... life wasn't too exciting today. It was just kind of slow in general. And, let's see here. Made breakfast for dinner. Just the typical stuff. So how about you? What's up with you?
Not a thing, just the temperatures.
Yeah, same old every summer. The temperatures rise up into the 90s. So, yeah. So, well, I understand that. You got your iced tea and your fan and all that stuff?
Yep.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, we got a great lineup of poetry tonight because we decided to not run a contest, just put up a topic board in Late Night Poets, do Open Darkness, and we've got some great responses to Open Darkness. So, let's go ahead and get this ball rolling. So what do we got first, Rex?
Fallout by EJ Cool, and you've got a SoundCloud.
All right. So... Sorry, looking for that. I know it's here. There we go.
Fallout by EJ Cool. Indistinguishable bits of grit, brain, and liquefied organ pulp. Sidewalk splatter, gutter rot compost, maggot bacchanalia gulch, odious mephitic death stench, inflamed obstructed mucous membranes, fragmented bone scintilla slops, slurping bursts sprawl on clogged sewer drains. Corpse-stacked alleyways belch miasmatic blowfly smog and pestilence. Meat-frenzied rats tunnel through septic flesh, endless blood-feast decadence. Perpetual night rains corrosive xanthan, sizzling skin-melt vapor. Bullet-pocked hazmat warning sign dangling discarded respirator. Infernal crematoriums curdle smoke-strangled viscid air. God is dead, spray-painted on abandoned building brick-faced disrepair. Street bonfires 2 stories high, well-fed by anarchic casualties. Fission flummox, mummer masked as heat lightning, seeds mutant legacies.
Wonderful read and write there, EJ. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Apocalypse Now. There's a nice line in there that fits, although you got to turn it around a little bit. Don't you just love the smell of decomp in the morning? Ah, such aromatic flavor. And that's what this paints, but an uglier thought to a the Vietnam War era thought. This walks a dystopian universe after all the dysfunction of society has fallen down to the ground. Inference is quite not just, as she puts it, odious, mephitic death stench. Nice touch with that. And inflamed, obstructive mucous membranes. Boy, does that kind of hit the note of something that's ballooned to the point of, there's going to be a burst there soon. Pestilence offering up a septic flesh, blood feast decadence to the, not just the rats, but the miasmic drone of blowflies. There is it's clearly a darkly painted scene, kind of that back alley sort of, hey, dump the bodies here until we get the crematory fired up, because this is going to take a while. Well, better end might be just, you know what, take a flamethrower in the moment. Burn them right there on the spot.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, you know, I hadn't actually thought of the Vietnam War. I had thought more along the utopian angle, as you mentioned, I thought this was a fabulous dark rite. I mean, she did not hold back when it came to the visceral imagery. I mean, it was just downright gory ugliness, which I really enjoyed and appreciated. It did make me think of End Times. It almost, to me, had a zombie-type feel, which works really well with a theme of an apocalyptic End Times. The alliteration was really great. So was the imagery. And, you know, for me, it was that second stanza that particularly stood out, with the corpse-stacked alleyways, belch, miasmatic, blowfly, smog, and pestilence, meat-frenzied rats tunnel through septic flesh, endless blood feast decadence. Like, the only ones who are doing good at this point are the rats eating the rotting flesh. So just an excellent dark rite and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
The Existence of Reality by I Am Samurai. That was yours.
All right. And The Existence of Reality by L.M. Samurai. And it goes like this. The guillotine would have fallen but for rusting cloying chains. Another patron complained that his head still remained atop shoulders of existential dread, others amongst the rabble more fortuitous. The lucky reduction of torment from the unknown author experted, vexed, perplexed, the crowd cries for her crucifixion. Disappear, they jeer, a woman who's not here. Head falls into the basket, the audience cheers. I am huddled in my bed, covered toe to toe in emerald ash borer, beetles of psyche. Keeps me company, pollution, profanation, omnipresent. Aqua sodden douse, bedriddled, universal, psychotic scorpion, flies erupting ubiquitously, the material reduction deluge, inescapable. Divinity, hear me, says another poet. I surrender essence to amoretic amor ecstasy, to abet fiendish fell experiments on sapiens, to be your fourth antichrist. What do you want, says the daemon. Hail, sweet malice. These foul, malignant mortals need eternal silence and peer. They are flickering color storms remote from my tormented sighs. The head rises once more. The skull also ascends. For now, in the gloaming unlight, I am going mad by blessing of the cataclysmic midnight bollocks, unsought, objectionable, undesired, detestable, unwelcome, unworthy, rejected, dejected, shunned, spurned, bitch-slapped and friendless, with heart alone and soulless, I cared not. Now has begun my transition. We'll find pleasure through tribulations in shutter burning, water rat-a-tat, stately in flames. We are the womb. We are the abyss. We are the tomb. We are exhumed. We are the vault, torch lit. We are the crematorium, pyre pit. We are the womb. We are the abyss. We are the mausoleum, crypt kissed. I submit my ethereal dream divine of a destitute penury district. I tender the beggar's beautiful equipment, ragged white tights with black polka dots, one sultry garbage bag and lonesome money can. I offer you the saint who lives as a beggar. Vagabonds solemnize humanity, spitting on mankind, commodity and chattels, filthy rags of vagrants maligned. O nature made of mercury, eternal enigment, aloof of truths arcane and fathomable, you are clement, you are Brummel, you are arid, you are sultry, whose end is God. Vomiting wretched out slimy bodies from voice box, grim echoes in the dark, Holden failed wigs into ponded hands, and the humored rats whose presence is forgotten, for the corpses do not die, for the damned do not die, for they do not die from the Iliad to COVID-19. Wait, am I not also corpse stillness for your eternal mortuary arts? I am huddled in my sarcophagus soliloquy. Sheets stand upright, suffused with semen polluted and sprouted, spread to muscles devout, tissues blush luxurious cheek, oculi aglow in the din, hands transverse on the glacial keening gale, Bell and I wandered worlds and clapped my hands, only whispers then wheezing, then wailing, then sobbing, then shrieking. Then the dogs began to howl, the fell monstrosity everlasting, this abhorrence is undying, this vulgarity villing is eternal. Carry me whither to the existence of reality, grave bursting, schizophrenic brother in need. Never again, alone, we bleed. End poem. Wow, that was, I have to say, that was quite the epic dark rite. And Rex, your thoughts?
Hey, for once I didn't get a long one.
Yeah, right?
The existence around it, there's a bite to the harshness that walks within it. That opening quote, the introduction itself, the guillotine would have fallen but for rusting coin chains. Another patron complained that his head still remained, yet he finished out the crowd cries for a crucifixion. Disappear, they jeer. A woman who's not here, head falls into the basket. Audience cheers. Boy, that gives rise to the French Revolution and the late 1780s and 1790s, how, yeah, they couldn't get enough, and it was a spectacle, and pretty soon they ate themselves alive, because I keep telling everybody, once you start feeding Madame Le Guillotin, she doesn't stop as long as there's bodies, and she don't care who body sits beneath her blade. So that kind of hits on that very note of people eating themselves, because they got no one else left to walk into and have beneath that blade except one of their own, eventually. Now, the second one was a little shorter, but I thought of Ash Borer Beetles, keeping you your psyche a note of touch in the darkness. That's it's a little bit of fear. It reminds me of that book Whispers, where two or a pair of identical twins got locked into a an outdoor not bunker, but a underground storage when they were bad, and they had to. They screamed, but they had to live with thousands of cockroaches crawling all over them, turned them insane, not to mention they loved killing people. Anyway, the next one kind of hits on the same, the need of taking care of business, so to speak, the need of killing people. So I kind of walked through this with the thought of that which people are willing to do unto in the name of whatever voice they are, they hit onto, whether it's the demon you've got sitting in the number two, the long one, or the thought of O nature made of mercury, eternal, enigmatic, aloof, abstruse, arcane, unfathomable. You are element, you are brutal, you are arid, you are sultry. Whose end is God? There's the question. Kind of hits on that notion of if there is a God, why does he let this wild things happen? Oh, that's called free choice, don't it?
Uh-huh.
And the back end. I am huddled in my sarcophagus soliloquy. A last call, almost the last right you give yourself in that moment. And the back end, schizophrenic brother in need, never again alone we bleed. I kind of, that hits on the idea of those who walk together, breathe together in like-minded happiness also kill together the same way.
I like those thoughts. I like those thoughts. You know, I too had thought of the French Revolution, but, you know, in general, the whole idea that throughout history, the audience has always hungered for judgment and for blood. I really like that when you mentioned about, you know, how each person has their individual, and I'm slightly paraphrasing here, but like their individual God that they follow, their individual thought that leads them down that path of destruction and despair. And I like that because it's something I've always thought myself is, you know, one of the things I've noticed is people will be very quick to say how they're an individual thinker. And it's like because they don't have a specific, you know, religion. And it's like, no, there have been people who have thought like you before, whether you follow a religion, a philosophy, you know, whatever it is you follow, trust me, you're not the first one to think of it, you know. And whatever path of destruction you follow, it's still a path to destruction. You know, and I did like how this beginning part really focused on the idea of that audience cheering as the heads are falling, you know. And, you know, I really liked that she threw the word bollocks in there, like right in the middle, like calling somebody out. Love that word. You know, the skull also sends her now in the gloaming unlight. I am going mad by blessings of the cataclysmic midnight bollocks. You know, it's almost like it's a curveball. Like it's, you don't expect it to be there, but it is, and it gives you an opportunity to, you know, pause. Let's see. You know, I particularly another line I'm really drawn to is the beginning line of part three, which is "O nature made of mercury." This, because that kind of feels like the point of mankind poisoning the earth. Because, you know, you had mentioned the idea of people killing off each other and, you know, destroying basically the economy or the food chain until the point where they're, you know, eating themselves. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I also think that in a time like this, the poison will seep into the earth. This is just, as I said, it's epic. It's got amazing imagery and metaphors. It's very thought-provoking. I really like the abhorrences on dying. This vulgarity villain is eternal. Carry me with her to the existence of reality. You know, I feel like, you know, like it's that whole idea of not accepting the reality you have, or, you know, or maybe, heck, maybe the whole poem is told put from the point of view from somebody who's schizophrenic. And none of this stuff is actually happening. You know, that's a possibility I just thought of. But either way, I think it's just a really wonderful dark write and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
An Owl's Bagatelle, number 2 by Jack Blue. A purple dagger lured me down the darkened woods, something like a willow dancing slow to requiem, beckoned to the void beyond the sinking reed. A brook was slithering with a lady's shadow, drifting up the water like a violet violin. A shroud of flowers shone around her face afloat. Searching angel's mail for the sorry grail, I play a dove above. To love or not to love, if dressed in baby pink with a demon's wink. Singing so, she found me and I flew off here and there, only to be falling down on the frightened ghosts. Her lunatic pavane lingered pianissimo. End poem.
Wonderful read, Rex. Wonderful read. And an excellent write by another excellent write by Jack Blue. You know, I like his use of color and imagery, and let's see here. Let's see. I felt like there was this idea of embracing death, you know, and it had a very mythological feel to it, and I really liked you know, searching angel's mail for the sorry grail. I play a dove above to love or not to love, if dressed in baby pink with a demon's wink. There's also a kind of a very Shakespeare-type feel to it. You know, it just really, you get to the idea of the presence of death. Something like a willow dancing slow to requiem, beckon to the void beyond the sinking weeds. I like that because I can just, for some reason, I can picture the Grim Reaper curling his finger, beckoning. And I like the motion of the slow dancing because I think it fits the tone of the poem really well. And you know, just a wonderful use of music also to, you know, kind of capture the tone of the poem in the essence of how it just, it's haunting. That's what it is. Very haunting and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Two things. I get Ophelia out of stanza 2. And from the start, because of the owl and because of the purple dagger, I'm going with Macbeth. And so it's the owl that warned in Macbeth, hark, peace, I believe. And the sort of a purple dagger has me thinking of that note to out, damn blood, out, as she tries to cleanse herself of blood that sits upon her hands. Now, searching angel's mail for the sorry grail, that writes me into Arthurian lore, the Holy Grail, and angel's mail, the purity of the knights, the chain mail that they wear going into battle. I play a dove above to love or not to love. Yes, that's Shakespeare, I think, on that. if dressed in baby pink with a demon swing, baby pink or kind of hits also a note of innocence marked up against the thought with the demon's wing. The frightened ghosts, those that that haunt, it's the idea of that which walks within the heart and minds that linger and haunt us, yes, but drive us ragged sometimes, or even mad.
I like that. I like that. So it's, I like your observations on Macbeth, and I like that you mentioned the ghosts, the spirits that can be part of the actual, like, spirits that haunt, say, a land or a house, but also the spirits that haunt the body and drive the mind mad. So really great comment there. And what do you got for us next?
Twilight Rooms by Arcana. Thank you.
All right. Let me go mosey over there and find that. And here we go.
She enters twilight rooms that echo with silence. Stillness offers a cool caress, embracing ivory skin. Cloaked in obsidian, crushed velvet clairvoyance, her pallid presence pierces the physical plane. Perpetually dancing between paranormal possessions, she calls out through seances to summon spirits, manifesting materializations with mystical reverence at behest of those languishing in lamented loss. She wades on earthly realms through chosen eyes, escorted by unseen guides that dwell the ether, to contact ebbing entities beyond this veil, channeling sentient souls by raising vibrations. So many departed reach out from beyond, pleading voices be spoken through psychic lips, to be briefly allowed use of her physical vessel and pass urgent messages left unspoken. In this eternal pall of misty miasma, sentience swims through swirling smoke, patiently waiting to find some way through from yonder to impart their last embrace. She hears their whispers with intuitive aura as candles flicker and crystal balls cloud. Objects support in waves of haze as sitters stare in somber suspense, all striving to hear a spoken sentence that calls forth absent comfort and closure, so they may weep away their wailing woe to hear once more the voice they know.
wonderful read and write, Arcana. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call into a show, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem.
That's well done. It's not dark, but it does offer up a notion as to what lies behind the nature of a medium or whatever you might attach to them, be it sullen or be it sullied or something that walks in reality. It doesn't really matter. This kind of hits on the notion of her understanding, not just the physical, but the that lace curtain that separates one world from the next, where if you're of the right notion, the right mindset, you can actually bring forth something from the other side, even for a brief few minutes, for someone to hear in that voice, because he hits that note with the last stanza, to hear once more the voice they know. There's that note of almost like a pressure relief valve being set off, so you're not boiling over with something. You can actually maybe make peace in the moment and let them too move on, so to speak. So she wades unearthly realms through chosen eyes, escorted by unseen guides that dwell the ether, to contact ebbing entities beyond this veil, channeling sentient souls by raising vibrations. This doesn't walk the line of a huckster or a trickster or a charlatan, as they've sometimes been embraced. This hits on the notion of someone who actually understands and knows the difference between both worlds, and can and do have moments of clarity which allow them to offer something from beyond that veil itself. And the great amount of alliteration, which adds nice touches of thought throughout the whole piece.
Yes, definitely. I too really like the alliteration. It gave it a very classic feel to it. And, you know, I have to agree with you that this is definitely about a genuine, spirit talker or, what was the word you used that I'm suddenly blanking out on? Medium. Yes. You know, and I had to read it a couple times earlier, which, you know, was well worth it just to make sure, because oftentimes, mediums, psychics go into that line of being charlatans, as you were mentioning. The ending especially reminds us of how susceptible people are to being fooled, because as it says, that calls forth absent comfort and closure, so they may weep away their wilting woe, hear once more the voice they know. People are so desperate to have closure, to have, one last moment with a loved one, that they'll easily fall for tricksters who will take their money. But I like here how he touches on it's very genuine in its tone. It's a wonderful look at a woman who has that ability to pierce that veil between the living world and the spirit world. I particularly like perpetually dancing between paranormal possessions. She calls out through seances to summon spirits, manifesting materializations with mystical reverence. I like the phrase mystical reverence because to me, there's this idea that she has a respect for what she's doing, a respect for a realm beyond our own. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
The Haze of Dawn by Casey Day. And that one's yours.
All right. And you can hear me all right, correct?
Nope.
smart ass. Okay. Do-do-do. The Haze of Dawn by Casey Day. And it goes like this. Is there a piece I haven't seen behind the picket fence lining of our dreams, between the fantasies you left inside of me? What did you hope to find, price you had in mind, to pay for all the moments that I just can't leave behind? Don't you crave my touch? Can't it heal the pieces we broke? The last time we spoke before the sun woke, time trickled in and our tears turned to smoke. Hide under lies so paper thin, missing in the light in your eyes. I'm the one who said goodbye, but you're the one who's gone. It's all wrong. Feel you crawling in my skin. I did you wrong. I did you wrong. I did you wrong. And now you're gone. End poem. And, yeah, I thought that was a emotive dark write. I thought it had a really nice rhyme and flow to it that gave it like a song-like quality. I could actually see this being put to music. I felt it really spoke on the idea of love lost, and of course regret, the repetitiveness of I did you wrong, really adds an impact, a finalization to the thought that of wronging another person, and realizing that the mistakes you made or the choices you made to wrong them, they're not going to be coming back. And I like the questions in this. You know, don't you crave my touch? Can't it heal the pieces we broke? And I think the question about healing is very important, but I think based on the ending, I think it's almost a rhetorical question because it's something the person already knows the answer to, that, you know, the broken pieces can't be healed at this point. So Justin, and a beautiful, heartfelt write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, those opening three lines posit the notion of fear. Fear enough to run. You look at the sort of the picket fence linings of our dreams between the fantasies you left inside of me. She ran at those notes. And then the thought to pay for all the moments that I can't just leave behind. There's a lot of baggage sitting in that stanza itself. And the pieces we broke, kind of hits on the notion of there's something, the rift that sat there. But anyway, it does boil down to the fact that she wasn't strong enough to hang around, so she splits. And in between, he dies. And that's what's, it's all wrong. Feel you crawling in my skin. I did you wrong, and now you're gone. The soulful note, because it wasn't even a proper goodbye. It was just a kind of walk out the door moment. And she can't even make an apologetic note of, yeah, I took the wrong road, but I've come back, so to speak.
I like that. I like that thought. You know, the idea that of planning on coming back, but it's too late because of the fact that he died. And, yeah, I could definitely see that there. So very cool. Very cool. Like that. All right. And what do we got next?
Restless by Mr. M. And you got that one.
All right. Let me find that. And here we go.
This is my recital of Restless, a poem inspired by Joseph Conrad. Days in chaos, nights in terror, this was the dreaded routine. Many people that I knew could not wait to sleep, but I later realized that this was because they actually got rest. No rest for the wicked was a saying that came to mind. When the sun was out, I was often struck in a haze of turmoil, and when I would eventually collapse from exhaustion, the demons would have their fill. What a bauble my little soul was, for they seemed to be most enchanted by my essence, since they showered me with all of their devious delights. After my hellish escapades, it was hard to tell when I was awake or if I was dreaming. One seemed to blur into the other, and the lack of rest would exacerbate the already daunting trial of making it through the maelstrom of life. Over time, my ventures into the hellscape grew more vivid and terrifying. All of my senses were amplified, and every fear was multiplied. They would prod and poke and find semblances of joy and ecstasy, especially relishing the idea that I could not escape. My consistent participation was mistook for loyalty, and in the end, as I surrendered to my madness, it seems that the nightmares chose me.
Wonderful read and write, Mr. M. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And he actually came up with something new for the the show, because on the topic board I had put some quotes that if people wanted to write something, they could. And he wrote to a quote, "It was written that I should be loyal to the nightmare of my choice," by Joseph Conrad. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Oh, a double bite into that, which comes with a touch of madness when it gets amplified by the fact that you can't sleep because of that which peruses your evenings to the point of driving you over the edge, and how eventually you end up giving in because that's the only way you're going to get the semblance of some kind of rest is to actually walk within that nightmare and let the nightmare have you. And in this case, it's the thought of hell and the demons doing their damnedest in delight to the thought of pain as well as pleasure, which is kind of double-edged in and of itself. Pleasure to them, pain to you, but it kind of hits on that notion that you're deep enough in the dream that you actually notice that part of it. So the idea of being more vivid and terrifying is because you've gone without sleep for so long that it is that terrifying, because even awake you kind of feel that you're walking blind within that vein, and yet nothing makes sense except to actually give in to the whole thing and thereby actually giving into the madness itself.
Exactly. Yeah, I like that. I like that. And I had definitely similar thoughts in the whole idea of giving in. And there is that, it really delves into the idea of somebody going mad. I thought this was an amazing dark write. I was glad he was inspired to write something new. Besides the giving in, the going into madness, the finally descending, into the nightmares in order to have some semblance of peace, which I definitely can agree with, I also saw the idea of a man who tempts fate over and over again until his will is no longer his own. To me, it's like the idea of playing with matches over and over again, until you get burned. You can only dance with demons so often before they take over your life. And I really like that ending with my consistent participation, and then put participation in quotation marks, was mistook for loyalty, and in the end, I was surrendered to my madness. It seems that the nightmares chose me, which I thought was a nice take of the off the prompt and the idea that, you know, being loyal to the nightmare of your choice eventually means that the nightmare chooses you. I also like the use of the word bauble. What a bauble my little soul was, for they seemed to be most enchanted by my essence since they showered me with all of their devious delights. Sometimes a simple word choice can make a difference in a poem because, you know, like he could have gone with the word treasure, which would have been good, but bauble is better because that gives the idea of something that's almost a treasure, but not quite, because it's a bit more cheap, a bit more generic. You know, it's basically, a plaything. And so I really felt like that added to the depth of the poem. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next?
Shadows of Lost Souls by Bill Schiller. Goblin heads are grinning. I'm left spinning from sarcastic style smiles. The shadows of lost souls taunt much more than they beguile. Even in glorious allure of aurora, on marvelously mystic nights, shadows of lost souls dubiously defy all that's brilliant and bright. Despite harmony or melody, sounds are drowned by gloomy screams. No matter how I try to sleep at night, shadows of lost souls sneak into my room to feed upon my dreams. And Paul.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And I'm glad that Bill was inspired to write for the show. Wonderful alliteration and goblin heads are grinning. And great, rhyme there. I liked that. To me, you know, I thought this was an excellent brevity that packed a lot in just a few lines. And it gave to me the idea of the nightmares that take over the mind. No matter how I try to sleep at night, shadows of lost souls sneak into my room to feed upon my dreams. Like, it's that idea that your sleeping mind is no longer your own. I also really liked, even in glorious allure of aurora or marvelously mystic night, shadows of lost souls. You know, it's not just at nighttime. I like the phrase, glorious allure of aurora to describe, you know, the rising of the sun, that time where the sun first comes out, and it's so beautiful. And yet, even in those moments, the shadows of your nightmare still haunt you. So I thought that was very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Let's see. I'm going to go, the goblin heads are grinning. That's an easy thought, but I'm going to go with the gargoyle because that is where I think the true allure for this comes out of. The gargoyle heads are grinning. Those edifices meant to scare away demons or keep out demons from churches and such. I'm left spinning from sarcastic style smiles. And yes, if you look at gargoyle heads, they offer up such a mirthful, sarcastic smile. Shadows of Lost Soul kind of hit me up the throat with old-time churches or graveyards. Old 300-500 years. I like the fact that he added little extra space between where he wants a little bit of depth drawn in. From the sarcastic style smile, it rolls into the shadows of lost souls taunt much more than they beguile. So you get onto that little thought of where the a touch of that he wants you to put a little bit of emphasis on. And again, shadows of lost souls dubiously defy all that's brilliant and bright. So the idea is being lost within those the thoughts of those gargoyle heads, the what they bring to the table in depth and meaning, going back a few hundred years, or even 1,000 years for that matter. And the bag angle is, no matter how I try to sleep at night, shadows of lost souls sneak to my room to feed upon my dreams. I get the idea of somebody who's working, a priest or a minister or a pastor or a vicar who's part of an old church, and he lives in the on the premises, probably inside the church itself. It's got a room for him to sleep in, as well as maybe a small kitchen or so. And this is his lot in life. Those lost souls are the shadows upon his, because he spends eternity with them on a daily basis.
Oh, very cool thought. I like that. I like that. And yeah, I could definitely see that. Like when you start talking about the old churches, and I did, like when once you mentioned that, it did bring to mind the gargoyles that are often part of the Gothic style architecture. So, really great observation there, Rex. All right, what do we got next?
Vigil of the Night by Stelina, and you got a SoundCloud.
All right, and here we go.
Yellow gleaming eyes in the shadowed corner of the room, ready to pounce, watching intently for the slightest move, listening for the quivering escape of a contained breath. A sentry standing guard, waiting for fear to beckon it. Alert, ready to draw the fangs and project the claws. Stare, unwavering in its watch, lest it misses a chance to take what it craves. Perchance sleep will halt its mission. The sheathed form begging for sleep is painfully rigid, feeling the yellow flames burning into the skin, waiting, waiting. The heavy cloak of Nyx is now all enveloping. This is the hour, the climax. The creature flexes muscle, ready to pounce on the petrified prey before it. Yet, weariness overcomes fear, and with it descends the blessed nymph of slumber to cast her magic spell. Instantly, the creature cowers beneath her and scuttles away, ready to return for another vigil of the night.
Wonderful read and write, Stelina. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'm going to go with, well, it's a bite into something else because it does offer that thought. The note of werewolf and vampire, one protecting the other, yet has the thought of trying to take the one, yet is coaxed out of that, but still holds vigil of the night itself. So there is that link to both that kind of walks itself into the flavor of I want to, yet I can't because of it. So it's kind of nice notation of what one does for one while understanding one's place, so to speak.
I like that, the idea of, you know, and I think considering that there are fangs in this, I think, you know, saying there's a bite to this poem is definitely, yeah, a spot-on observation. And, you know, I like that, I like the format of this. Like the imagery, the use of the word Nyx for the night. The heavy cloak of Nyx is now all enveloping. This is the hour, the climax. The creature flexes muscle, ready to pounce on the petrified prey before it. You know, I thought this had a wonderful imagery and was an excellent dark tale of a creature who haunts in the shadows of night. And what I really like is, and I get the impression of a vampire with the mention, well, actually, I would say werewolf, now that I think about it, you know, because it says, you know, a sentry standing guard waiting for fear to beckon it, you know, alert, ready to draw the fangs and protect the claws. I definitely get the impression of a werewolf. And as you mentioned, the idea of one creature watching over another, a protector, because, you know, with the sentry standing guard, it's almost as if they're, I would say almost like a mating pair, you know. And it's interesting to me that it draws back with fear. Weariness overcomes fear, and with it descends the blessed nymph of slumber to cast her magic spell. Wonderful personification of nighttime, and just an intriguing rite. And I like that there's that slight mystery to it, where it doesn't directly say what the creature is, so you're left guessing with different possibilities. So very well done. All right, what do we got next?
Rapture by Cedar Chapman, and that one's yours.
I feel like I'm reading a lot tonight.
Only every other one that I do.
It feels like more than that. But
no, this is cool.
Okay. All right, if you say so. I don't know about that, but okay. All right, and, you know, all right, this is Rapture. I went for a stroll along a woodsy. Oh, this one should be read in a man's voice.
All right, Rapture. I went for a stroll along a woodsy trail. Wild winds grieved through fog and trees. It almost ominously whispered, "Come to me, please come to me." And as I paced, I turned abruptly. There she sat, silently, facing me. "Who are you?" I asked. With tangled hair, tainted soot, she waved. Drawn to her darkness, I blithely obeyed. So parted her black veil for me to see. Helpless was I, but to stare and gaze. Her face was gray with ghoulish eyes. She reeked of rotted flesh and pus. And as nauseating as this abomination was, I craved to feel her frigid embrace. I lifted a white gown and stroked her thigh, pulled her down to the mud to lie, so to maul her bosom like a demon in heat, and kissed her deeply without retreat. Maggots and worms crawled into my mouth, their gooey innards like spoiled custard swirled. As we rolled in rapture, the roots and twines dragged us to depths of forest soils. I clawed and clawed in frantic despair, choking on dirt and gasping for air. She eerily cried, "You can't escape. You are mine. You are mine." And Paul.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I really enjoyed this dark, twisted humor with this visceral, gooey imagery. It had a humor to it that was dark and twisted and clever. But, you know, it also had that message of, you know, be careful of what you want. You know, be careful of following that path of lust and being blind to everything else. You know, I particularly liked the third and fourth stanza. And to me, what really grabbed my attention was and kissed her deeply without retreat. Maggots and worms crawled into my mouth. Their gooey innards like spoiled custard swirled. I thought, you know, that is a perfect way to describe something really disgusting. Gooey innards like spoiled custard swirled. I really thought that was just very visceral and creepy imagery and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Let's see. Well, if this is anything but a dream, well, you're doomed. And yeah, spoiled custard swirling in your mouth, and worms and maggots. Yes, enjoy yourself. Not to mention the thought of abomination, frigid embrace. Yeah, it's still, hey, I guess you could have gone a little further and delved a little deeper, but that would have been a little tainted in the repertoire fold.
Mm-hmm.
But so much for the demon that comes out at night to the succubus. That's supposed to be beautiful. This one's pure ugly and God, well, hob kneed, black tongued, green teeth. I'm glad she's in your nightmares, not mine.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, I think that's part of what makes this poem funny is because usually, you know, and he did delve into the idea of the myth. There are like a lot of mythology out there that has that beautiful woman that seduces and then turns out to be a monster. But I think part of what makes this funny, as you were commenting on, is that the idea that she's obviously very ugly, which really makes you think about how long it's been since he's gotten any action. So, you know, but excellent comment there, Rex.
Oh, yeah. He's been gone long enough that bile and putridity, hey, won't stop him now.
Exactly. There, no ooey gooeyness will be stopping him now. Oh, too funny. And all right, what do we got next?
Radiology, Radiocolors by Luke J.R. Well, since you trade off the other one, this one's yours.
Yeah, I thought the other one was better for your voice, but dang it. All right, well, here we go. All right. Radiology Radicalis by Luke J.R., and it goes like this. Streams held behind closed walls, bursting through invisibility, generations to follow in order to create history. Once more for the shadow on the wall, living through misery. Part ways with the monster that's hiding within she. Twisted seams, broken dreams, cryptic voice speaking within me. There's a shadow of doubt on the corners of your eyes, where tears once were now dried with the voices misheard. That's why you only see laughter. You follow the herd, all expressed without a word. That's not unheard of. Waves echo through the misery, shadows growing nearer. What happened to the light that once revealed the face? Instead, there's an audience that needs to be replaced. It's long overdue. The laughter grows louder. It's okay. There's only so much someone can do for the others stuck in glue. It's not the substance that should be investigated. It's the roots beneath that are invisible to the naked eye, holding in place someone who needs to reintegrated, leaving the stage for a moment of silence. Misery becomes laughter. Mentally, it's louder. I'm trying to tell you all story, but it's laughter that I heard. It's becoming louder than the silent birds, because morning slowly climbs into night. That's the reason why I call this a chamber of blocked light. Radio silence, radio on, radio single, radio off, shorter lines, radio signal, good night, end poem. I have to say that was just absolutely an excellent dark write with just intriguing lines all the way through. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, I'll bite through a couple of things. The radio angle on the bottom kind of set that sort of old-time radio listening. And then it just, at some point during the night, because it's old-time, it shuts off because they've got regular hours, so to speak. But the radiology up front, and the streams held behind closed walls, bursting through invisibility, had me thinking of radiology being that note of looking with inside. And radicalist, that might be a turn on ridiculous, so to speak. Generations to follow in order to create history. So that does walk forward, but it does sit on the sort of the radiology angle, maybe transference of that which goes forward in time, as well as the possibility of is there actually poison coming from the wire, so to speak, that belief. These days, everything walks around in those little curves where, hey, you get your head too close to that too long, all of a sudden you've got brain tumors. But the thought with hiding within she, because it's capitalized all the way through, kind of had me thinking of the is that definite, or is that just something attuned to the radio on the back end? Because that could also, the she, mean the sort of mother, kind of like what's his name from I can't think of it now. Doesn't matter. And again, still he walks into waves echo through the misery, shadows drawing nearer. What happened to life and what's revealed in face? Again, it points again to that old-time radio show. Leaving the stage for a moment of silence, misery becomes laughter, mentally it's louder. But the back end, shorter lines, radio signal, good night, radio on, radio off. I'd be thinking of the mind slowing down to the point where the shorter lines are the destabilizing note. The radio signal is going down, and the good night angle might be death itself.
There is a question of the whole idea of the poison that seeps into the body and in the mind. By the way, I sent you a message for you to check. I was really intrigued with the capitalization of she, which I'm guessing is like an acronym for something. I have to say that with the ending, radio silence, radio on, radio single, radio off, it kind of gave me the whole idea. It almost feels like another end time type poem. It feels like somebody trapped in like a bunker, being all alone after the world has been devastated. Killed off mostly with poison, and they're trying to figure out if there's anybody else around. And it feels like almost like, because the last word is good night, it feels like the whole idea that that's their entire day, just trying to reach out to another life form, like another human. And then the end of the night. I really like choices of words in here. you know, with the waves echo through the misery, shadows growing near. What happened to the light that once revealed the face? Instead, there's an audience that needs to be replaced. It's long overdue. The laughter, you know, it feels like there's this almost like this idea of a mockery of what once was, you know, happy and beautiful, and now is nothing more but the shadows mocking it. So just a really great dark right and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Broken Clouds by Aaron Panther. Voices tango across the edge of night. Their burdens echo like a raven's breath beneath the moon. Moments veiled in shadow linger in perpetuity, becoming that unexplained shiver down a nervous spine. Bohemian rhapsodies hint at a sorrow-filled legacy as doubt descends like a broken cloud. The world is still turning, and here I remain, trapped in the fold of unforgiven thoughts. And poem.
Ah, oh, shoot, we had an audio for this one. Dang it.
Now you tell me.
Well, it was there. Yeah. Okay, sorry. I'll go ahead and play it.
Okay.
But wonderful read there, Rex. Yes, and we do. It's in the studio. Sorry. It should have said right there on the board, like beneath it. But, yeah, I'll go ahead. It's a short poem. I'll go ahead and play it. So, All right, let me find that. Come on, I know it's here.
Well, there can't be that many up there.
No, but it looks for some reason like it was the one that didn't make it in. All right. Go ahead and go to something else, and I'll see if I can get that added in.
Okay. What do we got? What do we got? Okay. All right. I've got alone in the dark. Dark and noise. Her first night alone, all alone, a scratching wakes her quick. She throws off the covers and puts her foot in something slick. Trembling, her fingers reach out for the lamp on her nightstand, but the bulb's been broken. With cell phone, the room she scanned. Slowly, weak light shined across the floor until it landed on the wet spots. She let out a shriek so shrill. Her closet then flew open. An evil figure left on her bed, and now the only thing that's left is her torso and bones. Oh, Biff. Biting human. Are you there, Pam?
Okay, when I said I was going to get something done, I'm sorry, I thought you understood that was meant that you would be running the phone, the show.
Fine. Well, I'm the only one here anyway, so why not? Well, talk about kind of hits me with that note of moving into an old house. And it's your first night there. Everything creaks. everything scratches, everything kind of niggles at you in the moment because it's your first night in a new in a new place, whether it be old or not yet. The thought of that which quickens the spirit in the moment, traveling her fingers reach out for the lamp or nightshade, but the bowl's been broken. With cell phone, the room she scanned. That does put a little touch of glow in the room, but doesn't reach out very far. And I like that. That finds the wet spot on the floor. But the angle, that last stanza, her closet then flew open, an evil figure left on her bed. And now the only thing that's left is her torso with no head. Classic ghost story. You run out of gas on a lonely road, and the boyfriend says, "You sit here in the car. I'm going to go get some gas. It's just a mile up the road." And he's gone for half an hour. God, where the hell is he gone? And the next thing you hear is on the roof of the car. You get out and look. And there he is, hanging from the tree, rolling in the breeze across the top of the car. I like that thought. Nicely done, Dark Adorers. Thank you. And now, Pam, you going to pull a rabbit out of your hat?
Yeah, sorry. You know what? Unfortunately, I can't get that done. I will, because I can't do it on my Kindle Fire, and my laptop is in the bedroom with my daughter sleeping, so... you know, I apologize for that, but I'll go ahead and I know it's a bit awkward, but I'll go ahead and comment on Darkened Auras, and then we'll go back to Errant Panthers and comment on that. So, and all right. But wonderful read there, Rex. And, yeah, again, another wonderful, great poem that has a nice rhyme and flow to it. I thought this had a creepiness to it. Oftentimes there's different kinds of darkness, and for me, this was creepy. I like how it was that whole idea of your worst nightmare brought to life. You know, that idea of that monster that you think doesn't exist until you find the body, with the torso with no head, just laying there, you know, just so... Really just a wonderful dark write and very well done. All right. And back to Errant Panthers' poem, which I apologize that didn't get in. All right, your thoughts on his poem.
Let's see. Let me get it back up again. Well, the Bohemian Rhapsody was a nice touch within this too, because that song's filled with a lot of sorrow and sadness, and the thought of voices tangled across the edge of the night, their burdens echo like a raven's breath beneath the moon. There's that note to not just the sadness in the moment, but there's almost an unforgiving note to that, and then he hits on hint at a sorrow-filled legacy. Could be a point of thought to Freddie Mercury himself or to anybody because the world is still turning and here I remain trapped in the folds of unforgiven thought. That kind of paints the idea because Freddie was fearful of coming out at one point because he didn't know if the fans were ready to embrace that note, so to speak. And that was kind of displayed in the song itself. The idea, of, especially his family, the idea of coming out on that level and admitting who you are was something that he feared. So the thought of becoming that unexplained shiver down the nervous spine does hit on that idea of that which clutches our heart coldly, because we know we have to offer up something, yet it's such a disturbing notion not knowing the outcome beforehand, or at least understanding where it might go, because he didn't know it all. So I'm wondering if this is kind of an offset dedication to Freddie Mercury himself.
Yeah, I like that thought there. I like that thought. Very cool. And thank you for that. I like that thought, those thoughts. I thought this had just, you know, amazing imagery and metaphors. It felt haunting. It was beautiful and it was haunting. I like the way it spoke on the idea of that night that seems to linger on, and you know, the memories that tear us apart. I really thought too the mention of Bohemian Rhapsody's hint at a sorrow-filled legacy, as doubt just like a cloud. I don't know. To me, that really speaks on the idea of being compared to a parent, or coming from a family where there's a cycle of abuse. To where you're trying to become a new person, but you're struggling not to feel like every other generation. I also really liked the lines, moments veiled in shadow linger in perpetuity, becoming that unexplained shiver down a nervous spine. You know, there really to me is that idea of constantly just being kept alert, fear for danger, you know. So excellent, right, and very well done. All right, Rex, what do you got for us next?
I gotta go get it. Let's see. What was that one? That was. Did that one. How about Weaver?
What's that?
Striga by Weaver. You've got a SoundCloud for that.
Okay. All right. And are you going to put the link in the room?
I already have.
Okay, let me refresh again. There we go. Okay. All right. And here we go.
It slides with sinuous stealth into my dreams. Suddenly I see all is deadly, dark, and dangerous. I feel horror, terror, despair, because I know my grip on sanity has become very precarious. There is a bolt of lightning which pierces my skull, scrambles the neurons and connections in my mind. In that sudden shaft of light, frozen for 1 second, I see the demon stripper who vowed to take revenge on all mankind. Aware on the gateway she has chosen, I ask, why? I hear a nice cold voice in my head, dripping hatred. You are an ancestor of mine, so to force you to kill your family will bring shame and misery upon them. I will have my revenge.
Wonderful, Dark right there, Weaver. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. I like that she brings the demon, the female demon, the Striga, to life in this rite. It was a really excellent dark rite of revenge. It's got an epic feel to it, even though it's not particularly long. I do really like, the second stanza all the way through. And then aware I'm the gateway she has chosen, I ask why. And I like how there's that idea of the interaction between the demon and the person that, the woman that it'll possess. And, you are an ancestor of mine, so to force you to kill your family will bring shame and misery upon them. So I like that the revenge, like within those lines, there's that idea of the revenge being even deeper because it was somebody who was hurt by their own family. And so therefore they'll get revenge by killing, forcing an ancestor of theirs to kill their own family. So excellent, Dark Rite, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, Strega is Polish, but it also walks on a couple different thoughts. It does come up as someone who is cursed, which could be she could be the witch, could also be a vampire. That Strega also is witchweed, which is a parasitic plant that grows most often in Africa. So it kind of paints the nice thought of what Strega is anyway, which is parasitic, and that's what you're kind of getting here. Even though it might be a dream, it's the parasitic angle that takes effect. Aware, I'm the gateway she has chosen, I ask why. I hear an ice-cold voice in my head dripping hatred. You are an ancestor of mine. To the force you to kill your family will bring shame and misery upon them. I will have my revenge. That idea of that type of witch or vampire needs the angle of removing family, and having it done at the hand of a member of the family gives her what she needs in the moment, because she hates all of mankind because of her chosen realm.
Absolutely. And I like that you did that little bit of extra research there and looked that up. It's always cool to learn something and to have new information.
Well, there was a TV show on some years back. I can't remember what it was called, but it involved a Striga, and they had a Polish vampire hunter as part of the cast. So that's where I remember that from.
Oh, okay. Huh. Sounds like an interesting show. If you ever remember what it is, let me know, because maybe I can find it on Netflix or something. Sounds interesting. All right. So what do we got next?
Martyrdom by Arendt. That she had a sacrifice, is that true?
And here we go.
Martyrdom by Orange. They must have been happy, shedding their flesh, fashioning flutes and pens out of their ivory. Mothers of pearls, bone graft, unto the hall of sanctum. They came to me in gruesome waves, their throes in threes. You must avert your face in catechism to avoid the sheer blood. Like magical ink, the stuff of legends and spy novels. I was painted pictures of catacombs, the little voice of my tweeting double saying, cool. Secret meetings of my immortal soul with reality TV stars. They cut their sails, hoping to get caught, hoping the bars of their captors would set them free. The mystery of faith only collapsing on itself more densely with each lash. When the news suicide bombs into my living room, flames descend into the deadest of nights, bringing to life the skulls in the catacombs, all inside out, their empty gaze, eternal. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Orange. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. I really thought this was an amazing work, right? Strong imagery and metaphors. You know, to me, the general theme that it spoke of was the idea of a world that seeks violence for that 15 minutes of fame. I particularly like, they came to me in gruesome waves, their throes and threes. You must avert your face and catch a chasm to avoid the sheer blood. And they cut their sails, hoping to get caught, hoping the bars of their captors would set them free. You know, and there's such a juxtaposition there and such a sense of false hope in finding freedom in the bars of your captors. So really just a stunning dark write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
A good portion of this I'd have gone with just the picture itself, but since you drew the picture out and also dropped in secret meetings of my immortal soul with reality TV stars and the news suicide bombs in my living room, has me walking another realm, so to speak. The idea they must have been happy shedding that flesh. It kind of hits on the notion of the ease of dropping one side of oneself and walking into something else totally different, and the thought of mother pearl's bone graft onto the whole of sanctum, offering themselves up as something more than they really are. They come to me in gruesome ways that throws in threes. The threes hit that notion of dealing within magic or even the dark arts, and once you cast that angle of mysticism, if you do it wrong, it comes back at you three times three times three. As a note to how powerful it bites you in the ass if you get it wrong. They cut their sail with that stanza. The mystery of faith only collapsing on itself more densely with each lash. That has me hitting on the notes of the flagellates. And this kind of walks strictly in cultish terms because of the back end of this, all inside out, the empty gaze eternal, kind of gives the idea of they've bitten into and born off the zombie angle, and that's all they know, that's all they care about.
I like that. Yeah, there's definitely the thought to the cult, and I like how you said, you know, people who present themselves as more than they are. So, great comment. And what do we have next?
The True Nature of Man by Poetic Creations. His skin cracked and peeled, withered and blew away, along with any residual rigor mortis that had festered within those broken bones. Brittle, crumbling digits removed both of his eyes with the aim to remove pesky visions of atrocities, that of mutilated bodies, that parted this realm many decades ago. With frail old hands, he gouged them out, yet sight remained. He rolled his eyes at thoughts of discarding of the whole. The chills have passed now, but the chatter of teeth, it still echoes a lipless mouth. The ashes of yesterday produce fertile soil to nurture future growth. And with a little light, another orchid blooms.
There, Rex, and wonderful dark right. by PC. Ah, frick, ouch. All right. Sorry about that. I thought this was a beautiful and haunting rite on the idea of life blooming up from a history of death. I found it intriguing because, you know, it's got a soul darkness all the way through and touches on how death is a part of history, and especially the ugliness of those crumbling digits removed both of his eyes with the aim to remove pesky visions of atrocities, that of mutilated bodies. There's this real thought to me of somebody who's seen some horrific stuff. And then it lightens up at the end with that thought, with a little light, another orchid blooms. The idea that, you know, eventually that history of death and despair turns itself around and, there becomes growth, there becomes life. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
It is all about their death. But the story, the chatter of teeth still echoes a lipless mouth. So that is already, that sits on the nose of the skull right in the moment. So, and the skin cracked and peeled, withered and blew away. Also, the thought of that which is gone. So all that's left is the bones, the crumbling digit, removed both of his eyes. That might just be the fact that the hands are left up against the skull itself. So gives you that interpretation of gouging one's eyes out. Yes, still see, sight remains. That's because with the flesh gone, the hollow orbs offer up that note to seeing, because you are viewing them as they are viewing you at the moment. And it's kind of that notion of the acid of yesterday produced fertile soil to nurture future growth, and with a little light, another orchid blooms. It kind of hits on the idea of even with the ugliness of what's seen right there and then, and the imaginations of what might once have been accumulated within his vision, so to speak, the back end of this is what is produced because of the sloughing off of the generous amount of meat and innards that actually give birth to other life. You got things to feed on, others to feed on you. So, natural order of life.
Well said there. Great comment. All right. What do we got next?
Final attempt by Simon Scott. And that one's yours.
All right. Final attempt by Simon Guest. Kill me softly in the moonlight. Pain no longer resides here. These bloody lines within such aged flesh open and close at one's will. I am but a folly. Death appears no more. Tired of being called. Failures have nothing. He instead stays at the card table, curled up on floor within a ball, stuffed tiger in arms, tears fall, yet numbness fills the soul. Blood pools and war wounds are bravely shown. I know I shall survive. You always find me, but today death wears a wry smile and poem. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
That kind of hits at the notion of suicide in the moment, because it drops in death twice. Death appears no more. I am but a folly, but today death wears a wry smile. So the act of actually kind of hitting at that note, open and close at one's will, the sort of the aged flesh. So is this a note to wanting to leave this realm because of the kind of pain that lingers tightly as you age? I'm not sure. Stays at the card table, like that thought. There's that notion of once you start dealing cards with the devil, you'll always get the shorthanded end of the deck. And then blood pools as war wounds are bravely shown. All right, so it might be something, a note of PTSD. I know I shall survive. You almost find me, but today, death wears a wry smile. So do you almost find me? Kind of hints that it's someone who is attuned to when this might rear its ugly head in the moment, so to speak.
I like those thoughts. And yeah, they're definitely, I could see that, the idea of, you know, somebody suffering from PTSD or, you know, like attempts at suicide. I didn't think about like PTSD, so I think that's a great thought there. But, you know, I did think about the idea of an old warrior who has, you know, defied death over and over again. And something I hadn't thought about until, you know, after it was read here on the show and I was listening to you comment, I was looking at the part about the stuffed tiger in arms. And it dawned on me that, you know, I think part of this is the idea of whether it's a modern-day warrior or you're looking back in more ancient times, it's the idea of an older man who has defied death in war, who has lived to his old age, and now his either his child or his grandchild is dying, and death is offering up that wry smile. You know, that idea that youth would be taken, you know, at least that's the thoughts that come to my mind. So, you know, I find it a very, very intriguing dark rite and very well done. And what do we got next?
Calliope plays Painted Ponies in Transdimensional Loop by Pretty Bird, and you've got a sample.
Ah, right. And here we go.
Calliope plays Painted Ponies in Transdimensional Loop by Pretty Bird. Calliope plays over grinding gears and shadows dance in jagged lines where gray turns black in Nickelodeon flashes. The soundtrack of broken time hangs just this side of a migraine with no escape. Can't outrun pain, can't mask fear from shadows, they feed on it. Starving man. It plays as the carousel spins and lead paint chips of Ring Around the Rosie, equine style. Abandoned memories taste like unwashed sin and denial. Deny, 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 and maybe, just maybe, when eyes close, the air won't change. It won't smell like scorched earth and toxic mold. It won't bathe cold skin in familiar saccharine scents of 31 flavors of antifreeze. Empty beside memories that felt like love or joy or hope or something. There were definitely something. Invisible doesn't equal non-existent, and I can't paint pictures into truth. Calliope music drones 10 speeds too slow. Coronary double time rhythm palpitates, and I remember you would wake up early just to say you loved me. Pressured silence bleeds eardrums and bears teeth with three heads of guard dog perfection, and nothing gets by. Nothing survives abandoned funhouse dreamscapes. Dirt stains time with truth, the losing side of a lopsided bar fight. Tell me a story and paint me a dream that remembers to want to say goodnight because you can't sleep either. But the calliope plays the soundtrack of broken time, hanging just this side of a migraine with no escape from dreams that see backwards and just can't close their eyes.
Wonderful read and write, Pretty Bird. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. I really like how she had the merry-go-round music in the background. I thought that added to the performance very well. I thought this had strong imagery and metaphors and was really an excellent dark ride on those memories that play themselves over and over again. And that never seem to let go, and they cause pain. It really makes me think of the idea of abuse and stress-induced trauma. I really like deny, 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 maybe, just maybe, when I've closed, the air won't change. It won't smell like scorched earth and toxic mold. It won't bathe cold skin and familiar saccharine scent of 31 flavors of antifreeze. You know, 31 flavors of antifreeze. It just really makes me think of the idea of somebody who wants to poison themselves, somebody who wants to kill themselves. Also, empty beside memories that felt like love or joy or hope or something, they were definitely something. You know, and to me, that gives thought to the idea that oftentimes what we think is hope is not. Oftentimes what we think is love is not. So just really beautiful and emotive and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
I like the migraine as a large metaphor for the pain itself because of what she drops in, lead paint chips. Poison, ring around the rosy, death, abandoned memories taste like unwashed sin and denial. There's an idea of not wanting it to be so. Then again, deny, deny, deny. Then dropping in 31 flavors of antifreeze. 31 flavors is that note to Friendly's ice cream shop. The sort of easier times, better times. And again, there's something else from here too that hit me up quick. Indivisible doesn't equal non-existent. So it does happen to hit on the same flavor, but there's a differentiating note as the memories still linger. Music drones 10 speeds too slow. Carne, double time, rhythm, pound the pace. And that notion of the knock in the heart, the V8's missing its timing, so to speak. And precious silence, bleak eardrums, and bear's teeth. Ah, there it is. With three heads of guard dog perfection. That's thought to Cerberus, guarding the realm of the dead, hell, so to speak. Dirt stains time with truth. Another paint to death. It's tossing of dirt onto the coffin, filling up the grave. But this had me thinking of the way it was posited out, had me hitting on the idea of a Stephen King dark shorty playing out.
I like that. I like that thought. Very cool. Very cool. All right. Shall we try to fit one more in?
Let's see. What have I got? What have I got? What have I got? Dun, dun, dun.
Actually, I think we only have two carryovers, and let's save them for the next dark show. That way we're not rushing through anything. Okay,
all right,
Rex. All right. Well, great show tonight, Rex. Thank you, as always, for being an awesome co-host. We'll carry the two carryovers up to the next show, Dark Show. Thank you to Errant Panther, Luke JR, and EJ Cool for hanging on the board. We appreciate you all. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show or provided a write for the show, who is listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Just a wonderful night of dark poetry. Join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. And then 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time on Saturday, Part Sinner, Part Saint with Aphasiana and Babbler. And we've got a little time left, Rex, so do you want to mention what you have going on for your Sunday show?
Sunday, yes. The Two Cellos is the offering with a dropped in a few songs. You can either pick a song or you can just walk into the thought of how unique and what they bring to the table as far as taking cellos into rock and roll into another realm that they haven't really been played into before, because these two guys are excellent. And they not only play the rock songs hard, fast, and furious, they actually play it perfectly too. So dig in and have some fun.
Okay.
There's music there from Nine Inch Nails, Led Zeppelin, U2, Sting, what else we got? Guns N' Roses, Prodigal. So there's a wide variety of music to drop into.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that show. I think it's going to be really awesome. All right. Sounds good to me. And have a good night, everyone.